5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Central time. And it's September already, so I guess fall is about to happen. And it time is flying by. Soon be Christmas. As I say that, I've said that all summer, I think. I never know, time moves so quickly, but here we go. Anyway, before more time slips away, I think we need to bring Xtina in.
Xtina.
Come on,
I'm with you.
Thank you.
I'm good. You said that it was going to be fall soon, and I'm thinking, in Texas, does that really mean anything for you guys?
No, it just means it's still hot. It does mean, it just means we've got more chance of hurricanes. So, hurricane season is sort of now until November. So, all eyes on the Gulf. I think there's something big brewing out in the Atlantic that it looks like it's going to hit. Florida's going to get it again. So, Yeah, so whose stupid idea was it to live here?
Right. I am getting excited because we get the cool leaves falling from the trees. So not quite yet. We're still, it's still pretty hot out, but I'm hoping that we start seeing it soon. And it's so magical for me. I look around and everything is so beautiful, and I'm just so excited. So, and I actually had my son help me this past weekend and pull out all of my my bins for the holidays. So I have the fall decorations and Halloween. I have not pulled out the Halloween decorations quite yet, but they're looming. They're close though. So I'm excited about that. I know. But I don't know what's happened. I have four great big bins, and I'm running out of house. I really am. I don't know what to do with everything. I even told the husband, I'm like,
we need a bigger house. Yes,
yeah,
you do.
Easily
solved.
Yeah, he says I can rotate stock, but I don't know if I can. How do you? No, I'm going to save this for next year. I just can't. So we'll see what happens. Otherwise, it'll just look like Halloween or whatever season we're in. It just threw up all over the house. So it's amazing. So, yeah.
Excellent. Yay. Yay. Yeah, who doesn't? So, yeah, anyway, I just wanted to mention, I flew over to Florida last weekend. There's nothing quite like, the flight. And it's been a while since few months since I've flown, the stupidity that, amongst all the people still wearing masks, my favourite though was, so I had a stay over in Atlanta for an hour and a half, so I thought I'll go and have a bit of lunch, so I went to a TGI Fridays, in the airport thing, and it was brunch actually, so I had steak and eggs, and they brought me this plastic knife, regular fork, plastic knife, and then, I'm not six. Could I have something more substantial to cut my steak with? You can't because we're this side of security, you can't have metal knives.
Wow!
But you can have a metal fork. Because you can't hurt somebody with a metal fork. It's like, seriously?
So you should have stabbed him with a fork.
This is our life now. So, thank you, Taliban, you beardy bastards. This is what we... If it's not bad enough having to take my shoes and my belt off and, Oh, that's a funny thing. I was actually, not even thinking, when I left my friend's house and he grabbed a couple of bottles of water, and one I drank, one I just stuck in my backpack because I didn't travel light. And of course, going through security, because they're the x-ray, and of course this bottle of water showed up, I thought I was going to get shot.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I felt like an absolute
criminal.
And it was like, I honestly didn't even think. It's a bottle of fucking water. And I said, well, I'll drink it now. Oh, no, you have to go back out, drink it, and then come back. Oh, I said, just bin it. I'll spend $64 on a new bottle at a duty-free shop. Thank you. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say the last time I've flown, and that's pretty much, it's pretty much why. So, But, yeah, I think it's funny that we're seeing, and I hate to even say this on the air just because I know we do have some, listeners or some people that are very, they believe heartily in the masks and all this stuff. And I've seen the memes come up, and people are like, we're not going to do that again. And I'm like, again? I didn't do it the first time.
Yeah.
I really didn't. You know? I mean, now I will say that I live in an area where it's not densely populated, and, you know, I don't really, you know, go to a bunch of places where there's a million people around me. So that could definitely play a big part of it. But, no, if we had to wear a mask, we would leave. We wouldn't go in. So the people were like, we're not going to do that again. I'm thinking, again?
Well, I remember I used to wear mine to go to the grocery store, because it was the only way I could go to the grocery store, you know, and I flat refused to, because I used to do the online thing, and that was just a rip-off. You know, you could see that they would send you the oldest vegetables and the scabbiest bit of meat. No, seriously. You know, ordering a steak, you get the shittiest bit of steak and the vegetables that would just about, you know, they'd go off the next day, that sort of thing. And, you know, and then they'd send you the substitute stuff for stuff that was nothing like. It was just like, and then there'd be always a bag missing. You know, and I'd have the stress and the time on the phone, and I just go. So yeah, so I used to put up with it, and it was just awful having to go around with this bloody mask on.
Yeah.
It's just I hope it doesn't all happen again. It'd just be crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not doing it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you took that stance, and yet here you are, you know.
I know, yes.
Here I am, you know. So, I mean, luckily, I had nowhere to go. I mean, I had no social life at all, so I wasn't as going out or anything. But so the grocery store, that was my little trip out. You know, it was very sad, but that was my life back then. And to be honest, it's not really changed that much now, to tell you the truth. But, I'm happy in my own little way.
That's all we can really ask for, really, is to be happy.
It's all I have, so, yeah. Anywho.
Sorry.
What?
I was going to apologize if you guys hear my dogs downstairs, because they won't shut up. So if you hear that, oops. They're just saying hi. They're friendly.
You need to feed them to the snakes. I think that's what needs to happen. So what are we going to show this evening?
I am super excited. We have a returning guest. He's been on the show a few times before, and we just love him. But, I'm going
to
just introduce him, and we'll go from
there. I'm poised. Yes. I've got my finger over the button. I'm poised.
We have horror author and poet M. Enenbach.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. How are you doing?
Hi.
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. We're good. It's getting towards the end of the week, so we're flat. Plus, as well, you know, because of the holiday weekend, you know, I'm mentally, you know, a day behind. And it's nice to have a long weekend, but you end up having to cram 5 days' stuff into four. So it really doesn't help, to be honest. What they should do, would be more helpful. Well, you know what, they instead of giving us a longer week, they should add a day to the week. So you get a 6-day week and a 2-day weekend. They should do that, because you've got a whole extra, so you can thin it out a little bit. That would be better. I would like that.
Or let us off at noon on Friday, and we don't have to go in until noon on Monday.
Ooh, I like that.
I
could
do
with that. Yeah.
That wouldn't help me at all, because I it's me. I work from home and I'm self-employed. So
yeah.
It's just, you know, skiving off doesn't have the allure that it once did. And not same with expenses. You know, I can fiddle my expenses a bit. Well, hang on a minute. Again, the joy has gone out of that. You know, it's just like, it's not fun anymore. Well, the fun. You're not going out of it.
You just leave your office and go to the living room. That's not really a change.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I go downstairs after work.
Yeah, I'm You know, you see, the sad thing is, it's funny, because Monday, because I was flying backwards and forwards weekend, so Monday, so I'm going to have the day off. I'm not going to work. What do they end up doing in the afternoon? I thought, I'll just do a bit.
Yes.
That was my afternoon, you know, just cause, you know, I thought the lawn needed cutting. It was too bloody hot during the day. You have to pretty much go out at midnight to cut your lawn here. And it's still in the 90s. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I, to be fair, I tend to go out about 6:30, 7 of an evening because it's cool. Again, relatively, it's a little bit cooler. It's still baking hot. I know. But I like it. It's crazy, but I do like it here.
You're
I don't
not
know,
too far
like,
away from
everyone. My job has me out during the day, so I drive all day, and, like, when 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock hits, and it's just 103, it just sucks.
Mm.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh, I can't imagine. Yeah, I remember the horrible heat in Florida.
You get used to
and,
it.
No.
Well, that's it.
I
flew from Houston to Florida, and it was it was just as hot. And it was more humid. The guy, the cab driver
yes.
said, it's a low humidity day today. It's like 86.
Yes.
And it's like, that was a lot. And it was just unbearable. But, it's been constantly in the hundreds here for months.
You basically came to America and went from the armpit to the crotch.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah, I think you're about right. Yeah.
The crotch.
Yeah.
Sounds awful. Meanwhile, I'm over here, and I can't wait to see the first. You know, last weekend we drove. We were in Kentucky for I think Saturday, and there were some leaves that were already falling, and I was like, "Oh my God, it's coming!" And I was so excited. So, yeah, there's that.
When you see the leaves have fallen here, it's because the trees are dead.
Oh, the sun has killed them. Yeah, no, that's
yeah,
awful.
Yeah, basically, we had like 2 weeks of green, and now it's brown and yellow everywhere.
Oh, gosh, yeah, no, I...
Yeah, you know, my front lawn, so it's been nice. It's up until about a week or so back, it was nice, because obviously I've got my sprinklers water and everything, and then... It's just dying. It's funny to step on that dog, really. It's just, you know, annoying little thing. But yeah, you know, you spend also, I'm really proud of my front lawn, and it looks like shit. It's like, oh, fuck. And I'm reading on Next Door, you know, the HOA management companies, they're sending letters out to people trying to find them. And so you need to water your grass and or resod it. And of course, we have an water preservation orders going on here at the moment. So HOAs all need to be shot, I think.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
Bullies. They're the mafia.
Yeah,
they are.
I'm still waiting for your short story, James, about you know, an HOA from like hell. You always said you were going to write that, and I'm still waiting.
It's going to be a novel, I think. There's just,
Yes.
No, to be fair,
that's a Hellbound Books anthology right there.
Yeah.
It could be. Yes. Ah, there you go. And I'm sure, hopefully you'll be the first submission for that. That would be great.
Oh, heck yeah. We're doing this. All right.
Yay.
We should do that. We'll credit you, then.
Oh, God.
So, Mike, you were here to talk to us about your book, Cuckoo, that just went live not too... How long has it been out now? Just like a week or so, right? It's not been that long.
6 days. They came out the first.
6 days. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Awesome. Always wonderful when one of our babies grows up and leaves the nest. Yeah.
I am hearing much good stuff. Yeah.
It came out at number one in American Horror for new releases.
Wow, fantastic. Well done.
Yeah, I was very shocked. I wouldn't know, but people keep telling me all this stuff.
Yeah, I even saw a post from you. You're like, you know, I'm going to pretty much go offline for a little bit. Everybody leave me alone. And then, you know, it's number one in new releases and you know, and you're getting great reviews and people won't leave you alone. And then people ask you to be on their show and you just really can't get away from it.
The show's not so bad. It's when they send me pictures of reviews that I just get embarrassed.
Aw, see, I love reviews. Even the bad ones. Oh. You know, even a bad review, I just, I'm like, I remember my first bad review and how excited I was because I felt like I finally made it somewhere.
That's it. You've made it. When you get your, it's funny. I couldn't tell you. I mean, I couldn't tell you any of my good reviews, and I do have them honestly. But the bad ones, I'm my favorite. My favorite is the one. In fact, two favorites. The one that chastised me for using big words. Because I was showing off using big words. Seriously, it was for peed. I mean, I think it's still on there. I think obviously written by a 6-year-old. And the other one was, again, it was peed again. And he said, this is when it was published by Black Bedsheet Books. And the strap line was, you know, sexy, whatever, roller coaster. He's kind of steamy. And then somebody complained that there was sex in it. I said, well, read the front, the cover. Read the cover, for goodness sake.
They pay no attention.
Clearly not. Clearly not. But but you say we remember those fondly. And you know, well, I think we get more mileage out of the bad reviews than we do out of the good ones. So.
Yes. So
I stay away from all of it.
Yeah,
you do right. You know, you do right. It's I know. I mean, a lot of writers, it gets them down. They get a bad review, and it really, really. I've seen them on Facebook. You know, some writers have given up. They've absolutely stopped writing because they've got a bad review. And you know, I always say to, when speaking to, you know, new writers, he's don't let that. Mm-hmm. You know, just learn from it, move on, write the next thing. You know, it's you can't please all the people all the time.
Absolutely not.
No.
I feel like the bad reviews are bad because they make you feel bad about your writing, and the good reviews are just as bad because then you get ego, and now you kind of start coasting instead of trying.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel
that. You know, you're right. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, if anything, the bad reviews make us, or they should, you know, they make us strive to be better. I mean, I sure as hell I'm not going to stop using big words because, you know, no. I will not dumb down any more than I will censor, you know, and all this, I don't want to offend. I gotta speak to writers, you know, and always we can't cause offense. Why the hell not? Writers have been, artists have been offending people for, since since the first cavemen drew pictures of boobies on the cave walls. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Artists have been offending people.
I had someone tell me that maybe I should put trigger warnings before my poetry, and I just started laughing because, I mean, my God, I want you to feel something. Like in the stories, I want you to feel something, and I don't want you to expect it. So, no, you're not getting a trigger warning. You should know if you're reading me, I'm going to try to mess with your emotions.
But that's,
and
that
I
is
love
the point.
That.
Mm-hmm.
That's
why we write, isn't it? I mean, to give an experience, and I don't want to give an experience that I have to tell you at the beginning, watch out, this experience does this, this, and this. Well, then why read it? I'll just give you cliff notes.
It has definitely gotten to the point where people are putting trigger warnings. I've seen it in the dark romance, and there are, like, you know, hashtag trigger warning, and then there's, like, 20 different things, and I'm like, you know, do I even need to read the book now? I know exactly what's in it. So,
there are certain things, like, if you're going to have sexual violence, okay, warn the reader. Like, there are certain things that, okay, maybe you can warn, but I don't know. I don't believe in them.
It's something I would never do. But having said that, I mean, you could use it to your advantage. I mean, many, many, many years ago back in England, there was a blue comedian. I mean, he wasn't actually blue. I mean, he was does that phrase translate over here? And basically, he told me he was just very, very offensive, very just... You know, a very, very funny guy called Roy Chubby Brown. Big, big fan. I saw him live a couple of times. He's just so funny. But He was one of the first comedians to produce a DVD, or I think it was a video, as it was at the time. And it was actually his manager said, let's put this on the front. And they put, do not buy if easily offended. And it sold millions because everybody thought, wow, this is offensive. I'm going to, so it was a positive thing. So I guess if you wanted to highlight something, this book contains, graphic violence, it's going to attract that kind of person. But then again, by the title and the blurb and the picture on the front, it should let people know what to expect a little bit anyway. And if they're buying a horror novel,
like
there's going to be horror
trailer
in it.
Where you're spoiling it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I can say I absolutely refuse to. I'm not going to bow. So if somebody's offended, then I've done my job,
Absolutely. I agree. If I did something that rubbed you wrong in it, hopefully that was my intent.
Well, you said earlier about, the whole point of writing, again, we'll take art generally, is to make people feel something, whether it's, as horror writers, it's fear or suspense, or it could be any of the emotions, or trigger memories or whatever. That's the whole point. That is what why we do what we do. And I've read some works that have come across my desk for critique that have been written, and anything remotely that could be offensive has been stripped away, and it's just bland. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to it, you can't say this swear word, you can't say this, you can't, and it's, well, if it's in the character, everything is fair game, it's, that's what we do, that's our job. Like you're saying, if we're not doing that, if we're not causing offence or fear or making people have sleep, when people say, I couldn't sleep last night, brilliant. Thank you. That's a great accolade. I love that.
Absolutely. I feel like my entire life, like as a kid, they were slapping the warnings on the front of CDs and tapes, and there's always been something that they've been against. In the 90s, it was video game violence. It just keeps going. There's always something to be offended by, so I just don't understand why we keep feeding them.
Well, you just go back through the ages, it was always the arts. It was movies, it was music, it was books. Lady Chatterley's Love was banned, back in the day. It was offensive, and it wasn't offensive because of some of the language in it and because of the sex. It was because of the cross-class sex. That's what offended people. The fact that she was a lady and he was the groundskeeper, that's what offended people. Elvis, people were offended by his music because they said he sang like a black person, and they thought he was
shaking his
hips.
That was the devil.
And
yes.
It was sexual. it was what the N-word music, that's what caused offense. And the more people got offended, look how big Elvis got. Not physically, he did get, but you know what I mean. Look how popular he became. He did get big. He did. Apparently he's 25 stone and hadn't been to the laboratory in 4 months when he died.
Go back to all of that 50s rock and roll, the white guys who came out with those hit songs, that song was recorded by a black artist first.
Absolutely. Yes.
And just because Elvis got all that popularity, that's the only reason that any eyes were drawn to it. And thank God it was, because we got Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Stevie Wonder and everybody.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, obviously, I'm a big fan of all those guys. Little Richard's probably most famous, Tutti Frutti. It was actually an ode to gay sex, which nobody cottoned on to in the day, apparently. It was about gay sex.
It's fantastic, all the things that were hidden back in the day, and they weren't even hidden. They were right out in the open.
Yeah, well, Jailhouse Rock, good old wholesome, great movie, or whatever, good old wholesome Elvis song, again, was about sex in prison.
That's all. I've just
spoiled Elvis for everyone, man. I'm so sorry.
No, I love it. I do. And it's funny because nowadays when people come out with something that they deem offensive, it's like, it's not the first time. You know, this has been going on forever.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But now, the big, sorry, Mike. I mean, this is going to say the big difference now is the artists are now starting to pay attention to that. And they're worrying about, I'm going to offend people. I don't want to cause offense. And this is where art is just as a case in point, if obviously there's a whole debate, a whole other debate about artificial intelligence for writing.
Mm-hmm.
You try, we've all looked at, all dabbled and had a look at this stuff. I would never touch it with a barge pole, to be honest. But two things that it will not let you write is sex and anything horrific. That tells you all you need to know about, sadly, the way that they're trying to drive the market. Which is why I would never use AI, because take sex and violence and scary stuff out of our work, and what have we got left?
Yeah,
nothing.
Speaking of sex
absolutely
and scary
nothing.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I was going to go back to Cuckoo here with our I love the tagline, have you ever been in love? And, you know, I did start it, and I can't. And you even said, you know, I can't really say anything because I was going to say something just then about the tagline there, because that's I'm not sure how to take this quite yet. But tell us a little bit about it without giving away too much, because I do feel like it's something you have to like experience. You can't really know too much of what you're getting into.
Absolutely not, because the whole point of it is the journey. And if you know what happens on the journey, it takes away part of it. It started off as an experiment. I decided that I wanted to do the ultimate and unreliable narrator, where he was so unreliable that he believed every word that he said. He wasn't lying on purpose. He was just telling it as he recalled. And it turned into a love story that's in seven different unique forms of madness strung together as this person tries to piece together his life again. It's when I describe it, I feel very I don't know, it sounds like I've got an ego or something saying it that way, but it was the only way it could be done.
Now, yeah, you said it was an experiment. Where did you get the idea?
There's a writer, Sigmund Krzyzanowski. He writes a lot of short stories, or he wrote a lot of short stories of absurdist type in Russia. And he posted this idea in one of his stories that if it's fiction, then technically everything can be true. It doesn't matter how insane the idea is. It's fiction. That's the point. That's the power of language, is by doing this, we can make it real. And I thought, well, heck, that sounds like a worthy challenge.
It does. And it definitely sounds like something that will mess with your head. I used to think about, I have an ex that had schizophrenia. And, you know, just thinking about the fact that your brain can make you hear things and see things that aren't there. And I used to think, you know, if you didn't know that it wasn't really there, it is there for you, isn't it? I mean,
what's to say that it isn't?
Right. Yeah, that is, it's so messed up. But
so that's exactly where we went with this. I just used a lot of I'm bipolar and I have borderline personality disorder, and it makes things a challenge for me at times dealing with the world. So I just focused and channeled all of that into it and said, what's the worst scenario? And just kept making it worse from there.
Oh, wow. We have a clip to play. I think it's chapter one. Is it chapter one, Mike?
Kind of. There's not really chapters. It's like the entire thing is just strange, even the way that it's laid out. It's laid out in different times.
Okay. But yeah, we got one of our narrator bunnies there, Mike Harrietta, to read some of it, and I think he did a great job. So I think we're going to play it now.
Right. Okay. I'm on the ball. I'm going to hit the button now.
Now, for as long as I can remember, I have had the same recurring nightmare. I don't remember when it started. It has just always been there. Like the skyline of the city as you crest the final hill after a long drive. But it doesn't come with that sense of relief. It triggers that sudden urge to urinate. You've been holding it for hours without being aware. But the sight of home ignites a panic. You squeeze your legs together, twitching and spasming. You pray you will make it. You always make it. Almost. The nightmare. Same skyline. Nearly, just enough off, it itches your brain and makes your forehead scrunch up. A burning right between your shoulder blades nothing can reach. Blue-gray windows with distorted reflections of sunrise or sunset. Seems the needle on the inner compass has hit a magnetic fluctuation, but up is still up, even if everything feels a long way down. Even though you know you don't know you know, you know enough to maneuver the streets. A knotted mess of one-way streets designed to confuse evil spirits. A concrete dream catcher, blessed by Neolithic shamans, long before man turned noble wolves into inbred monstrosities. As the city fades, the buildings grow lower, becoming stout little things in clusters. Benign tumors of identical homes on identical streets, laid out in a honeycomb fashion. Hordes of silver utility vehicles, elongated eggs on oversized silver rims, sit side by side in every spotless driveway on each side of the street. The lawns are neatly manicured to exact specifications, handed down to Moses by the burning bush at the local chapter house for the homeowners association meeting. Happy little flowers dance in the tepid breeze, immune or uncaring to the faint orange umbra permeating the air, a thick, foul haze. A sepia-toned filter to invoke feelings of a better time in a different age, one where men were men and women liked it. They would brook no discussion, and dinner was served promptly at 6. Meat, bloody and rare and purchased by the lower, packed between the legs of the patriarchy. Or some similar malarkey. I'm a simple man. I don't understand metaphors. It gets disorienting. A feeling of motion sickness, like when you would read in the back seat as a kid and the headache would form. You knew better. You did. But those other worlds were so much better. The same houses, the same cars, the same lawns, the same dancing flowers with grins which seem more visceral the longer you stare. Menacing. Daring you to pull over and come closer. Yeah, that's what they thought. Keep driving. Your hands hurt. How tight are you gripping the steering wheel? For a moment, you see the car. Silver, egg-shaped, elongated. You're one of them. Assimilated. A coffee thermos. Silver with a fitted black plastic lid. World's greatest dad in cursive etched into the burnished steel. It is scuffed. Lovingly used. A faint scent of hazelnut lingers. Do you like hazelnut? Little streaks of lightning flash through your mind if you linger on the details. You don't linger. The flowers stare murder, outright fucking murder. You stare straight ahead. Don't make eye contact. Leafy chests bowed out. Something drips off the thorns to scar the neatly arranged topsoil. Perfect acidity and dampness regulated by faceless men in beige who come every Thursday like clockwork. No one knows who they are. They do not charge for the service. It is expected. It doesn't matter. You are almost home. Suddenly, crows line the power lines down the avenues, the lanes, the drives, and circles. They hop anxiously as you slowly take a roundabout. The sky darkens, but you cannot tell if it is the birds or the haze. The flowers still stare. One breaks a bottle and waves the jagged end at you. Keep driving. You know you have arrived when you see the fence, the dingy white picket fence. Crooked slats jut up like the smile of a meth addict, gnarled and warped by the elements which wrap around clumps of brown grass. The house is particle board, pieces hastily nailed together with random boards nailed at off-putting angles which trick the eye, non-Euclidean geometry in the abstract lean-to, clearly designed by a small child with thick crayons and poor hand-eye coordination. A sense of trepidation is palpable in the air. Two children in school uniforms stand by an open pit dug at the side of the house. The boy is in short pants and a blue polo shirt. He has your nose and crooked smile. The girl is in a pleated skirt and matching blue polo. They both have long, dirty socks pulled up to their skin knees. They turn to stare at you as you pull onto the cracked concrete slab with oil stains. Dead eyes like fish at the market, flat and black. You take one last deep lungful of filtered air before grabbing the door handle with a damp hand. You shouldn't be so nervous coming home. Dread should not be an identifier with the feeling of arriving at domestic bliss with two lovely children. The keening cry hits your ears as the seal is broken and the outer reality and the bubble of the vehicle collide. It is a weak wailing which registers possible to ignore. The decibel level is the perfect range to make the human mind fracture into waves of rolling anxiety and anguish. Next to the twins is a rusted metal wagon, one likely fire engine red, now the color of old blood. The hard rubber wheels are cracked and split, the axles bent, so every inch is a fight. Lying inside the bed of the pitted metal is half a child. The piteous thing lies against the bottom of the useless wagon, letting out a breathless howl of pure existential anguish. Endless single note screaming from something that had absolutely no right to exist, locked in a loop of constant agony. Watching out the window is your loving bride, staring at you vacantly with a smile like the fence around the scorched earth yard. The world washed out by the sound of half a child yelling for death. This might be a love story.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media. Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. We're here with Ann and back. Are you still with us, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Good. Good.
And I'm still here.
I hope you enjoyed the shoot. Debbie Harry was my first sort of proper teenage crush. And you know, I've still got the hots for her. She's weathered pretty well.
Sadly, my first
was
teenage
Drew
crush.
Barrymore.
Oh, yes.
Drew Barrymore.
Yeah. Sadly, mine was George Michael.
On many levels.
Wow.
I know. I had his posters up on my wall and everything, and I just – but I kind of missed the Wham stage, so I had no idea – maybe I just didn't connect the dots there, but,
he was creepy. When he was in Wham, it was all day glow and prancing around, and then suddenly he's in a leather jacket with a beard and hot ladies everywhere.
Yeah. And I was totally buying that.
Xtene, you were probably the only one who was buying that. It was just you. Everyone else through it.
I was naive. I was. But, I want to get back to Cuckoo here. I absolutely loved the excerpt. Definitely with poets, I think that I always try to figure out, is this fiction are we reading, or is this, you know, are these really their thoughts, or, you know, how close to home is this? I know that for myself personally, if you read anything I've written, I would say probably 95% of what I write is real. You know, I mean, you don't really have to go, I wonder what she was thinking here, because it's just right there. I've read a lot of your poetry, Mike, and I think it is just, it's wonderful, it's heartbreaking, and it always leaves me wondering, you know, how close this is to home, and how much of yourself do you put in your writing?
100% all the time.
Ouch. Okay. I don't even know where to go from there. Yeah.
I mean, wow. When I started doing it, I there was no expectation of anything except bleeding. I was too full of everything, and I was going to explode, so I just started to bleed, and I never learned different. I can't separate myself from when I write. Even in Cuckoo, the parts that are completely insane, like, I go method, I guess, would be the only way. Like, if I can't feel it, I can't write it. And if I can't feel it, how can I expect you to feel it? Because then it's disingenuous. It's horrible.
Right. Now that it's done, and, you know, the end, and it's out, did you feel almost a relief with getting it out there?
I don't know yet. I'm still kind of, it was safely hidden and I didn't have to worry. And now it's out there. And like I said, everybody's been super kind and the reviews have been wonderful. And I mean, the people that read it early, the blurbs just blew me away, but it's still, I mean, no matter what, it's, you're naked in public.
Yes. Yes. I definitely understand that. And yeah, I've been seeing the reviews come in, and the more I see, the more I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to keep going and keep reading. I'm intrigued, because it's definitely not I don't think it's a style of writing that I'm used to. So I definitely have to take a little bit more time and try. In my mind, I'm trying to see what's going on, and it's kind of difficult. So I'm like, oh, maybe I have to go back and figure out what's going on here. And I definitely feel like I'm piecing together a puzzle. Yeah. But I'm enjoying it, I will say.
There's,
go ahead.
At any point going on, there's like three layers of story being told.
Wow.
Not just with the time and not just with the insanity, but I knew when I knew what the ending was and I saw it so clear that the only way that it worked is if there was no holes, that there was no way that anybody could go back knowing what you find out at the very end and pick apart the story and not see that it was always there. That was the important part for me. I wanted, it was, the end is supposed to hurt you so fucking bad. It's just misery, but it's also the Rosetta Stone that explains everything that you've read before.
Huh. So, like, you know, oftentimes when I'm reading something, I will try to guess at the ending. And basically you're telling me that no matter what I guess, I'm probably going to be wrong.
I think that there's plenty of people that as they're reading it, they'll figure out exactly what is actually happening. I have no doubt on that because, again, I layered it pretty thick. If you're paying attention, it's definitely there. It's just hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it gets there, I will guarantee that nobody knows exactly how you get to where that ending is. There's no chance.
And I saw on Facebook, I believe, where it, this is not going to be a standalone. You have other parts coming. Is that what I read?
So when I got done with Cuckoo, it took me months to get out of that mindset. Like I was in a very dark place. It was not pretty. And I told myself I would never, ever write another novel. I was not putting myself through that. I don't do that on a short story. I can just bleed for a week and just go away. But a novel, that's too much linger. And then one day I was sitting there and, oh, I was so mad because I realized that Cuckoo was just book one and that there was a whole trilogy and it's all about love. And
wow.
I just finished part one. I'm at like 32,000 words on the sequel.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And how long did it take you to write Cuckoo?
3 months.
Wow. Again, wow. No, if you said like a year or something, I'd be like, oh, yeah. But wow, just 3 months. And
I just
did you do anything besides write?
Like exactly 3 months. I started on November 1st, and I posted on January 31st that I finished.
Wow, that's amazing. And while you're writing this, you still were writing poetry. I would see poems, you know, every day. Do you sleep ever?
I don't sleep a lot, but no, you're absolutely right. I still write poetry. In the middle of Cuckoo, I had to write two short stories that I had due for anthologies, and that nearly killed me stopping and switching mindset and then having to go back to it, but I mean, we do what we have to do, right? We're trying to make a name.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely wanted to get you on a show soon with a couple of other poets. And we just have because I know how much James just enjoys our poetry shows. Right,
we could give him a week off.
Oh, right. Okay. There we go. Could you put that in writing, mate? And I would love a week. That would be great. Have a week off. I envy poets. I'm crap at it. To be honest.
That's not true.
And I remember when I first read some of like Stina's poetry, which is some of the first poetry I'd read in a long time. And just how she evokes the emotions and the feelings that we talked about earlier, but stripped down, you know, using Sophie, so minimalist Sophie. He's just like, I couldn't do that. You know, I have my short stories, even at the time, were known for being long, you know, and I prefer a novel because I can say, you know, I'm not restricted by a short story. But, yeah, I doff my cap to poets. It is a rare gift, I have to say.
And you really should read.
I mean, No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike. I was just going to say you really should read Mike because he is one of the poets that I look up to. He's just you feel it. You feel every word he writes, and it's something that I strive to do. That's what I want to do. I want people to go, oh, my God, you just gutted me, which, you know, that's what I do often when I read his stuff. Matter of fact, when I'm scrolling Facebook, there's occasions when I will see a poem from him, and I'm just like, oh, I can't do that to myself right now, and I scroll by. I'm like, I just can't right now. Which is, that's great, you know, that because you do definitely make us feel. And I hate to say this, but we are just about out of time for our show. I think every single time I'm like, we have to have a longer show, and especially when we start talking about some of the poetry, we definitely have to get back together. You have to promise to come back on.
Of course.
Yay. And before we let you go, tell us real fast where we can find you online.
You know, the best place to go is mennenbach.com. If you go to my About page there, it has a link to all my books and my whatever it is that's got the T-shirts. There's Fool T-shirts and a Cuckoo shirt and stuff like that that you can get. But that's the best place to go because it's all gathered in one place.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Cuckoo by M. Enenbach. And thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'm going to get to reading as soon as we get done here.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you
so much, and we will speak to you again very, very soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Have a great rest of your evening. Bye-bye. I don't know where the time went. As I say, time flies when you're having fun. And always a great guest. I could chat to Mike all night. But unfortunately, time has beaten us. So it is that time where we have to say goodnight, Xtina.
Yay, goodnight, Xtina.
What you are, unforgettable, though near or far, like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does sing to me. Never before has someone been more unforgettable in every way. And forevermore, that's how you'll stay. That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too. That's why, darling, It's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I'm unforgettable too.